morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, February 18th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. We're in the middle of membership drive, and you've just heard the most marathon pitch from Oni and, from Lynn and Oni, I believe, Liz, and we're so glad that you are there. I'm glad that I'm here. Delayed this morning, but here nonetheless. We're still waiting for Richard Stallman to join us on the program. If anyone's wondering why we haven't had guests, it's because we're holding the space for Richard, because I know he is a guest that you're going to want to hear from. He is seldom heard from at all, anywhere. Before we get into the news today, the headlines from around Cascadia and the rest of the world, I want to thank Janet Anderson engineering the show today. Thanks, Janet. And of course, the intrepid Kathleen Stevenson, the AM News and Public Affairs Director, and of course all of the members and all of the volunteers, all those people who've called us at 1-877-500-5266. Because you know what? This is where it all starts. So I talked yesterday about how we affect change. We are very different from other types of radio that are in are able to a certain extent bill themselves as public, but we take it a step further. We take it all the way up to the edge. We're advocacy radio. We do things. We affect actual change in the community because our listeners believe in what they stand for. They have conviction, and they take that conviction and make it real all the time in small ways and great ways. And one of the great ways that you can make that conviction real today is by calling that number, speaking with one of our volunteers. What we want you to do, actually, is call us and tell us what it is that you like about this type of programming. What we've been talking about, and this is a topic which persists like an image on the retina only. This is an image on the ear since last week, and certainly stretching before and after, is the increasing need for the general public to understand some of the simple architecture of encryption and decryption, and to understand these two vital elements of communication today, certainly on the internet. It is important to understand how that architecture came about, and not to anyone's great surprise, it isn't a simple story, and it isn't what we've been led to think. And a lot of the terminology that has been tossed about in the past is incorrect and misleading. We have invited Richard Stallman, the MIT programmer and radical, who back in the 70s, at MIT started this whole thing. He wrote GNU, which is the foundation of the free software movement, and that's the term that we really should be using, and we want to understand why it's important to revise some of our thinking on this and understand exactly what happened during those years and why it has brought us to this state now, where we are more or less obliged to get up to speed fast on the architecture of encryption and decryption. GNU is where it all starts. Just another element on as we wait for Richard, who may or may not call in today to join us to get things straightened out on this. The Sunday, February 9th, New York Times, there was a note in their public editor's section column in the Sunday paper. Traditional journalism, and I quote, traditional journalism says, set aside your, let's start in earlier in the quote. Journalists bring their background, their beliefs, perhaps their faith, their politics, and their relationships to what they do. Traditional journalism says set those aside, be as objective as possible. A newer line of thought says be who you are and own it. Just tell readers where you're coming from. That's what we're able to do at this station. Other stations are going to tell you that they bring you all the truth, nothing but the truth. And that simply isn't, well, the truth, is it? At least here, we have the freedom to speak, to bring you the news and tell you straight up, truthfully, where we're coming from. I think that no listener out there who tunes in and hears Air Cascadia on a daily basis has any doubt as to where I'm coming from, so we'll leave it there. Yesterday, Oregon Governor Kitzhaber was the first witness. It wasn't yesterday. In a hearing before the House Transportation and Economic Development Committee, we're still talking about this bridge thing. It wasn't yesterday. It was a few days back when the hearing took place. And the fact that we have so many greater minds all lined up telling the governor, no, you're going down a very dark, deep hole here. It seems right now that the governor is pretty much the only one, except, of course, for those corporate CEOs who stand to profit, who still is advocating the Columbia River crossing. Nonetheless, our governor still seems to be pushing ahead on that doomed project. We really ought to be asking him why. That is the question that seems to have eluded most people. We have very little time left and a lot is going on. Once again, on the table, Iranian debacle, which will in fact shake all of our lives here in the Pacific Northwest around Cascadia. We are watching our nation once again attempt to bully a country which has for centuries been a leader in the region. This is a doomed game, and we know it because history would instruct us so had we availed ourselves of history in the beginning. So returning back to what we have to consider in a very, very short period of time, Portland teacher strike, returning to education. Are we creating another generation of people who have little or no understanding of the rest of the world? Teachers are the most critical link in this whole chain of culture and society that sustains us as a people and as a nation. We presume to lead the rest of the world, but really what we are is nothing but a large, undereducated, overarmed policeman. Supporting the teachers is so critical right now. And the GOP is confronting its own monster. The debate about whether to continue the dragnet surveillance of Americans' phone records is highlighting divisions in the Democratic and the Republican party. Both of these parties are beginning to come apart. Maybe, just maybe, we'll get to see what they're really made of, what's really inside there. We are flat out of time. We're still waiting for Richard Stallman, like Godot, and we're right up against our time limit. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening, and now let's hear from the membership room where things are cracking right now.
Things are definitely cracking here, and it's time to be informed, know your rights, take a stand, and show your support for KBOO by picking up the phone and calling 877-500-5266. Or if you're online, kboo.fm, click on the little donate now jar and show your support for Air Cascadia, for Chris Andre, for all of the public affairs and news programming that you have come to rely on when you tune into KBOO. We know that you value this programming because you are listening right now. And we only come to you a few times a year to remind you that we can only bring you this kind of programming with your support. Over 80% of our funding comes directly from individual listeners just like you. We get a little of local business funding. We do not receive any kind of government funding, rather either state or local or federal. So it really comes down to you. What does this program mean to you? How much does KBOO's unique alternative programming matter to you? Put a value on it and then pick up the phone, 877 877- 500-5266.
And you know, Brian from Minneapolis called in and gave us a contribution, and he said, I live in Minneapolis and I'm a big supporter of our local community radio station, KFAI. Whenever I'm traveling, I head to the end of the dial to listen to the local community radio station. The weather last Thursday provided me with the opportunity to listen to KBOO for 4 hours while stuck in I-5 in the snow. Thanks for keeping me sane. The remaining 4 hours of the trip to Seattle were not quite as entertaining. And we're happy to entertain you, and we're happy to inform you, Brian, like many other people. And one way to keep this going, and it comes from you. It's great that it comes from you. Actually, I, you know, huge grants that make you beholden to people are not necessarily always such a good thing. We get to do the kind of things we know are good and true. 877-500-5266. So that's why, as I was saying before, it's a labor of love here. Everybody that works on the air is a volunteer. And they, even if they, or we have a teeny weeny weeny little staff, don't pay them much. And if they do radio, they are considered a volunteer at that particular time. And it is a labor of love. And to me, that's why it sounds so good. So this is the time to do to dial 877-500-5266. One of your last opportunities to support News and Public Affairs on KBOO for this particular winter membership drive.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, both Flashpoints and Stage and Studio are off today. Instead, we'll hear a special program from TUC Radio featuring public banking proponent Ellen Brown on Bypassing Wall Street, a public bank for Mendocino County.
TUC Radio, time of useful consciousness. Ellen Brown, Bypassing Wall Street. A public bank for Mendocino County, one of the smaller counties of California, 100 miles north of San Francisco, from the Pacific Ocean to Freeway 101, has a reputation for creative local resistance. The first to pass an ordinance against genetically modified organisms, Mendocino now may become the first in the U.S. to stand up to Wall Street and set up a local public county bank. Unless, of course, the city of San Francisco, where plans are well developed to create such a bank, beats Mendocino to the punch. Such a public bank would be authorized to remove the county's funds from the commercial private bank that now manages the deposits. The county bank would be able to use the same credit system that private banks use, which means access to the current 0.25% interest rate, instead of the going rate of 4 to 6% or more. Such a public bank would partner, not compete, with the local community banks and credit unions. A movement to create a county charter is already underway and should be placed on the ballot for the upcoming election. According to the San Francisco Deputy City Attorney, a charter city or charter county avoids the California constitutional provision that public funds cannot be lent for private purpose. This provision has been used against public banks. Of course, defenders of public banks argue that private banks that manage funds for cities and counties do exactly that when they make their decisions on how to invest. If all this sounds utopian, stay tuned to this broadcast, because one of the preeminent proponents of public banking, the lawyer and author Ellen Brown, we'll explain how this works. She's the president of the Public Banking Institute that keeps a highly informative website at publicbankinginstitute.org. Ellen Brown's best-known recent books are her analysis of the Federal Reserve, entitled The Web of Debt, and her 2013 book, The Public Bank Solution. Public banking, says Ellen Brown, is common across the world. Globally, 40% of banks are publicly owned. These are largely in the BRIC countries. That's Brazil, Russia, India, and China. They all were much more resilient to the current credit crisis. Even though public banking has distant roots in the American Revolution, only one public bank, founded in 1919 in an act of popular resistance to Wall Street, exists and really flourishes in the U.S. today. It is the Bank of North Dakota, and Ellen Brown will include much of their history and inspiring current practice in her talk. Their website is banknd.nd.gov. As we all know, banking reform has not ended profiteering or speculation. One result of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act was that in the next crisis, the taxpayers will not foot the bill. Who then will pay next time was made clear when banks on the island of Cyprus failed and deposits of some of their customers were seized. The banking rules that apply to Cyprus apply to the U.S. as well, according to new law passed via handshake, not treaty, by the Financial Stability Board, the FSB, housed in Basel, Switzerland. In 2009, the G20 countries agreed to be regulated by the FSB. This bail-in protocol that allows deposits to be seized was established by the FSB in 2011. So the issue of public banking has two very urgent implications. On one hand, it holds the promise of having a money supply that would be interest-free to the local government that owns the bank, and allows communities or even states, such as North Dakota, to set their own priorities. On the other hand, it helps to protect deposited funds from being seized in the next financial crisis. Here's Ellen Brown, recorded in Willits, California, on December 14, 2013.
Well, it's great to have this opportunity to talk about public banking to a community that really is a community and that seems to be very interested in this idea and might actually take it and run with it. I think you'd be the ideal template. California is always on the cutting edge, and particularly Northern California, and I've heard that there are a lot of sort of, you know, people that are really into sovereignty and making your own rules and doing your own thing, and for that you need your own banking system, particularly when you understand how banking works and the fact that banks actually create all of our money, or virtually all of it. So I'm going to talk about state-owned banks and county-owned banks, but first I want to go into some basics of where money comes from in order to establish